You're listening to Fundraising Radio, a podcast about fundraising for early stage startups. The major rule that we follow here is no bullshit on this podcast, no music to relax you, no advertisements of our sponsors. And in this new season of Fundraising Radio, we are changing things up and talking about sales for early stage startups instead of just the fundraising portion of it.
And today as a guest speaker, we have Terry Hussein, VP of Technical Engagement and a member of the founding team at Aurum. And this is the second part of our interview with Terry. In the first part, quick recap, we've covered introduction to cold calling, what type of company needs to do it, and why. We also talked about testing out the outreach strategies, especially when it comes to cold calling, what you should mix cold calling with, because obviously it's not a standalone strategy. And we've also covered about some specific outreach strategies that have worked for Terry in the past and with Aurum specifically. Today, this is the part two. Today, we're going to focus on hiring the SDRs and BDRs, training them and managing potential burnout, talking about the compensation plans and calculating the ROI for the direct outreach team, especially when it comes to the SDRs and BDRs. So Terry, first of all, for people who have not heard part one, can you just give us a super brief introduction to yourself and Aurum, and then we're going to jump into the main discussion here.
Yeah, my name is Terry Hussein, as Constantine had said, and I've been on the founding team here at a company called Aurum since we, you know, started the company. I've held, you know, many hats, either in sales development, rev ops, customer success, and most recently, in technical sales, where I really help, you know, organizations and figure out how to technically validate and run strategies around that to make that easier. So that's a little bit about me. And Aurum, of course, is a live conversation platform where we really focus on automating all the manual and tedious work that's involved in, you know, really getting those live conversations and really helping reps boost pipeline.
And yeah, today we're going to focus on this specifically, which is the reps. And let's start with the hiring. So most of our listeners are founders who don't yet have like full-on teams. Most likely they have a team of a couple of engineers, founders, most likely being engineers, some of them trying to do sales process, but not doing too great of a job. And again, I'm obviously generalizing. I'm sure that a handful of listeners listen to this specifically, and they're like, what the fuck, man? I'm actually a killer of a salesman. So don't take that personally. But generally speaking, that's the gist of our listeners. So for them, where does hiring for the sales, or where does you know, this buildup of the sales team start? Do they need to start from the top and hire like the head of sales, or do they go from the bottom and up, starting with SDRs?
So I think really early on, it's important to determine whether or not the VP of sales is going to be the first hire in general. And you know, you can look at a lot of, if you look at Saster and some of the other thought leaders in the space, right? They'll often say, hey, you should actually hire potentially an AE or SDR like leader hybrid, right? First. And this is primarily because you still might be figuring out your product market fit. For us here at Aurum, you know, we didn't really bring on, you know, our VP of sales until we had, you know, roughly 5 to 10 paying customers. Mm-hmm. We were probably closer to $500,000 in ARR before we decided to, you know, formally bring on a VP to start building out, you know, that process. And to us, you know, personally, like seeing other, being a part of other startups and seeing how you hire a lot of your VPs early on when there isn't, there isn't that structural background, there isn't the required headcount that, you know, a VP is going to be building out and have teams of directors, managers, et cetera, that it really didn't make sense. So I guess it depends on where you are. You know, if you have really well-defined product market fit and you're already crossing, you know, 1 million ARR, like it's a no-brainer to get a VP of sales. Mm-hmm. If you're scaling to that and you can see that being the case, then of course, like a VP of sales is a great hire. But if that's not the case, and you might hire a VP of sales and they're not going to have, you know, people to work, they're not going to have AEs underneath them yet. They're typically doing founder-led sales alongside you. So they're going to be more expensive. They're going to require equity. Yep. And they might not have the building blocks they need to actually start generating a significant amount of pipeline.
100%. Yeah, no, that's the problem with execs. They are frequently not prepared to work, especially if you don't have the startup background. So with that in mind, for you personally, you did mention that before you got to the, or you only hired the EVP after you got to $500,000 in ARR. For you personally, how did you get there? Was it just you and the founder pushing for sales, or did you have an SDR on your team that did like a lot of actual cold calling?
Yeah, and I think that this goes to there's really two areas what you need to focus on hiring like the best people, right? And it comes down to a few things. First off, we already had a amazing SDR slash AE hybrid. His name's Patrick Cairns, who had worked with me at the previous organization that we were at together before. So I already knew that we could trust him. We knew he was a hard worker. We knew that he was smart. And so one of the things that took away from us is it took away a lot of risk, right? And also on Patrick's side, he has the path of like unlimited potential and growth if we do well. So I think one of the things that I always caution people on when, especially when you're hiring SDRs, is that no matter what role it is, if you hire the wrong people, nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, is going to save you. And I wish there was solid playbook or a tool or a special management technique that could bail you out if you make a bad hire. But if you get part of this process wrong, you're going to fail both quantitatively and qualitatively. And there's a list of incredibly bad things that can happen if you hire the wrong people, right? Your team will almost certainly underperform and you miss your number. Sometimes you're going to spend more time with HR than you are with your team. Your top performers will typically leave. You probably get fired. Everyone, including you, the people you hired, probably won't like you. So, first thing is making sure that you hire the right people. And so, if you're hiring an SDR or someone that's more who has that will to get things done at the startup level, but also isn't like a massive drain on your burn rate, you can afford to make those hires and see how they work out. Versus like a VP of sales, it can take a long time for you to determine whether or not they're actually working out. And by then, if you've hired the wrong VP of sales, you've done a pretty significant amount of damage to your company and your growth.
Truly, the hire of VPs or like heads in general is dangerous stuff. So let's talk about the lowly SDRs and BDRs. And obviously, I'm joking. I used to be an SDR BDR myself. Still do a lot of that stuff. So that is a joke. For those people, as you said, it's very important to quickly catch up on whether or not you did a good decision on the hiring. And quite frequently, that is done through the ramp up period, right? So, I've seen a lot of companies have tons of different approaches to that. Some of them advertise their ramp up period very publicly. They're like, hey, when you're onboarding, they tell you, hey, you got 3 months to start generating XYZ revenue. That is what we expect. If you don't get there, you can't, right? Others are like, oh, this is our goal, not hard goal. So, hopefully, you'll get there. But if not, that's cool. So, for you personally, Terry, which one works better? Which one have you seen perform versus underperform?
It depends on where you are. If you have an SDR team already, like you are going to have historicals on ramp and their ability to hit those numbers. So, you're going to want to make sure that you have performance management in place so that you can not only help the SDR understand what is success and what's not, but that you're also, able to make sure that the SDR is not, really like not actually a good part of the team, that you can performance management out. And you can't do that unless you give a strict number and you give a strict pacing. Now, there are things that happen, right? Everyone is human. Things can happen in their life that prevent them from hitting that number. So there is some sort of flexibility. But in general, if you already have an SDR team or you even have a few SDRs on the team, it does make sense to provide like a ramping period. I'd say one of the most important things before you even hire that first SDR is to do the job yourself so that you have a good baseline and understanding of how much energy and effort it takes to generate these sort of qualified meetings, right? Because hiring SDRs is fundamentally different from hiring from any other position in the company. Not only do SDRs candidates lack a work history to refer back to, ensuring they actually have the skills to complete the job, right, is not there. You're also making a bet that they'll have the drive to stick to the job when it actually gets super tough. Now, it complicates things too, because if you're hiring an SDR who already has a background in sales development, that's almost a little bit of a red flag. Like, why do they want to do this again? If they have the skill, like, are they actually going to stick around? Right. And so the thing is, like, we know skill can largely be taught, but the will to actually do something is not. And so in startups, you want to hire candidates that want to punch really above their weight class. And so I always recommend building a team of entry-level or semi-entry-level SDRs with very few exceptions. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you haven't had an SDR and you're bringing them on, this is actually popular advice and something that, same with AEs, that Scott Lees had mentioned to me about AEs, but also works for SDRs. When you look to hire your first SDR AE, if you can, hire two of them, because you're going to be able to then have a baseline understanding of whether are they both running into issues, or if someone's crushing it and someone's not. You're going to be able to really pierce that fog of war faster. And most orgs don't do that. They'll tiptoe, you know, into hiring one SDR, one AE. Without actually doing the job themselves. And now they have no baseline for understanding what good looks like. And they're unable to either performance manage someone out or understand that they should be, you know, rewarding that individual, because they have no idea what good looks like.
What the baseline is. Yeah, absolutely. And that's great advice for especially founders who are just in the beginning of their, you know, sales build up. A lot of them, as you said, they're trying to minimize the damage in case if there is damage, and hire just one to start off, and that just gets so damn confusing. Yeah, great call. And let's talk a little bit more about this process of hiring SDRs, because as you did mention, it's very complicated. A lot of them don't have any work background whatsoever, or almost none. So how do you define if the SDR has this drive? Because, you know, it's a very intangible quality to, like, make them run through a maze. Do you go out with them for a lunch and see how they handle the problem of, I don't know, there are no tables available, and you see how they handle it? What's your solution to this?
Yeah, so actually I wrote a blog. It's called Winning the SDR Interview. It's top five principles. I wrote this alongside Brooke Bachesta, who was at the time the revenue enablement manager at Outreach.io. Both Outreach and Aurum, you know, has had a good history of hiring, you know, really solid SDRs, those that have, you know, either been promoted into various positions. And then, you know, my former history is a lot of my SDRs have now become, you know, leaders. So in general, the first thing that we really look for is grit, and to understand how to figure that out is to really get better at interviewing. It's actually a skill that many people are not really good at. And it comes down to sourcing, interviewing, understanding their life background, and I would say what we call grit. And grit, part of grit can sometimes mix with diversity, even though those are two separate things. So I'll go over them really quickly. In terms of, like, sourcing, you really in the beginning need a large pool of candidates to get a sense of what good looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You should be doing anywhere from 10 to 15 phone screens a week with new candidates. And if you can't afford it, you know, you can look at recruiting firms. For example, Betts is one of the top recruiting firms that we had used at the time. But now there's SDR schools, things like Always Hired by Gabriel Moncayo, and some other organizations. And there's another one too, that I can send to you that can accompany this as well, that I'm blanking on the name of, but has sent over us a really great candidate who's doing really, really well. And so the problem here is that most organizations, they don't understand there's a fantastic ROI when you hire the right person. But if you hire the wrong person, or you're hiring too slowly, it's catastrophic. So it's unlikely that any manager or founder is going to have a network of entry-level candidates. That's just not, it's just not how it works, right? So sourcing is going to be the first key, right? And then comes interviewing. So when we first interviewed candidates, for the first two hires at Aurum, I did 40 screens per
candidate.
So 80 total to hire two people. When I spoke to sourcing agencies, they would say, hey, like, typically it's 10, 15 to 1, but we're not looking for typical, right? This is what they said typically, like, well, I'm not looking for the typical person. So it took a lot, right? And in the beginning, I noticed that my interviewing was probably not at the level it was when I, you know, first started interviewing SDRs 4 or 5 years ago. So like I had actually kind of backslipped. I needed to get back into interviewing, getting a better idea of the skill set, right? And I think one of the things is, as you build out your interviewing process, it's very, 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 very important that you actually write it all out. Every question that you ask, every process that you build, they should be absolutely identical for every single person. And you shouldn't be missing a single question. And you should be making sure that everyone is judged in the exact same manner so that you can have a real understanding of what good looks like, even those that you really liked, right? They might fail the interview in certain areas, and you have to put away that kind of human side and say, hey, you know, like, these are the tests I put these here for a reason. So I'll give you an example. One of the things that we ask here at ORM is, can you give me an example of a time where you did something that was really hard or challenging, and but you, in the end, you came out as number one, right? And that's something both me and Jason, you know, really ask in all these interviews. And the reason why we ask this question is it has multiple benefits, right? It allows them to, you know, evaluate, you get to evaluate their innate storytelling skills, right? How they're communicating, what actually motivates them and drives them, right? Are they a victim of their story or not, right? Or is it the hero's journey, right? Where they're going on that adventure, they're fighting that crisis, they're coming home, changed or transformed. And these are really the things that we look at, right? Because if you think about it, you know, for example, on our team, one of the early SDR hires at Rubrik, who's now a top AE here, Sarah Bookhammer, she grew up in like a tiny town in the middle of nowhere, California, right? She, while she was in college, she played on the women's soccer team, but she also was, you know, at College Works painting. She had no idea what she was doing there at the time. But by the time she graduated, she was the number one rep, you know, on the entire West Coast. So, you know, these are the sorts of people that we're really looking to hire because it shows that there's a lot of grit. So hiring is, of course, not only sourcing, it's interviewing, like you mentioned, it's the background that they have. And is there any adversity and accomplishments that they have? And then last is diversity. So you really want to make sure that not only is your interview process set up to take advantage of those five areas, but that, again, you're writing down everything and treating everyone the same so that you don't make the mistake of letting certain people slip through because you like them really well, et cetera. Yeah. Like that's a natural human thing to do. But if I look back on the hires where I let that slip and hired them, it was rarely the right choice.
That is something all founders suffer from. Absolutely. I've been there myself. I've hired numerous people just based on the gut feeling. And a lot of my interviews, I freestyle just like I do with the podcast interviews. So yeah, definitely great advice. And I will absolutely make sure to reach out to Terry after the interview to ask him for the recommendations that were mentioned earlier, which is the, you know, recruiting agencies and the SDR schools. That actually sounds very interesting, and we'll dig into that a little bit later potentially. So now let's talk about the compensation, shall we? So compensation is obviously a very touchy subject. Once again, how much do you separate between commissions versus base salary? What kind of spiffs do you want to include, and how does that all fit into your overall strategy of growth as a team? So let's start with the first question and cover the commission versus base. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so it really does depend on the value of those opportunities and how they're moving through the pipeline. And then also depending on your average sales price or depending on the mode in which qualified opportunities are backing into your math of sales and how much time it takes, that can also determine, you know, the split. In general, we find that as long as you have the right incentive scheme in place, it's going to work. There can be multiple types of SDR compensation plans. Usually they're base salary and commission. Some are tiered, and There are straight commission plans out there. I would say that the one that I find most successful is anywhere between a 60-40 or 70-30 split.
Mm-hmm.
So if you imagine an SDR with 100K OTE, they get a 60K base, 40K commission, or 70K base and 30K commission. Of course, that if you go any higher than that, then there aren't a lot of incentives. And if they're not producing well, you're also burning, you know, cash, right? It's not fair to the business. So I would say it's typically if you can start with a 60-40 model, that's going to be, you know, really good. But also note that if you're trying to hire a really great SDR, right now, of course, the market's in your, you know, swung, the pendulum is swung towards the employer. You know, you can get away with not having a 100K OTE for an SDR, but you'll need to have a 60-40 split within that. It's quite common to see SDR bases, you know, anywhere between 50 to 60K, and then the OTE be 30 to 40K. So at the end of the day, that 60-40 split is going to happen one way or the other. But I'd note that the lower that you go in base, even depending on geography, especially if you're fully remote, the more, you know, that you're going to have to fight for those great candidates. And so if I learned one thing throughout my life when it comes to managing SDRs or teams in general, pay people what they're worth, be in the top 10% bracket of pay, but be very diligent about performance management and be very targeted in term, and be very strict when it comes to ensuring that if they're performing or not. I'd much rather have a team of all really talented people who are getting paid a ton than, you know, a team of a bunch of, you know, C players that are getting the job done kind of, but they're not generating nearly as much value as the other team. The other team is likely happier. They're surrounded by great people. They're making a lot of money. The other teams are not making as much money. They're typically not generating as much. And there's more people on the team because you need more people to hit the same number. So just remind yourself of that. Like, it's very easy to go cheap on sales development. And if you think sales development is just about booking meetings, then don't hire an SDR. Like, there's a lot of cheaper ways. These are your next AEs. They're your next CSMs. They're your next leader of RevOps. Mm-hmm. They should be ideally the next person that could potentially take your job if you're in the revenue org. I look at hiring SDRs as saying, hey, do I think this person could potentially be in the next, you know, 5-6 years? Could they take my job? Right. If the answer is no, then you probably shouldn't be hiring them. And that's I think that keeping that level of thought and quality is where most SDR teams struggle, because if they think like that, they wouldn't hire many people, or they'd have to go through a lot more interviews. And that's scary because you have a pipeline number to hit. So it's very easy to fall into the trap of saying, well, you know what, they're good enough. But that ends up, you know, that ends up causing a lot of pain later on down the line.
It definitely backfires. Absolutely. It does. All good call outs. And we have so much ground to cover in the next 10 minutes. I'm trying to figure out which question to ask next, but you know what? I'll cover the question that's close to my heart, the SPIFs. Extra compensation for that goes beyond commissions, right? So for SDR specifically, I've seen a lot of incentive programs that are like per meeting booked, or like if you hit more than 10 meetings booked in a week, say, you get an extra $500. Have you seen that work, or does it usually look like a last minute resort? Because again, I've seen some companies try to implement that at the point where the organization is kind of falling apart. They see their SDRs borderline burned out, and this is their last chance of trying to resurrect the organization. So for you personally, have you tried to use that on the consistent basis, or just like as one-off tests, and have they worked?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really followed that methodology before. I think if you've experienced SDR burnout a few times, you can spot it a mile away.
Yep.
and so it's important to realize that it's typically seen around the 6 to 9 month mark. And then from there, it starts to burn out. Now, there are SDRs, even some on our team, and I've been an SDR almost for, you know, 2.5 years before like I fully was divested from that role, right? By the third quarter in a row, an SDR has typically hit their stride. They've made it through ramp. They know the day-to-day responsibilities. And then they hit a fork in the road, right? Do they see a future for themselves at the current company, or is it time for a change? Mm-hmm. So the first thing to recognize before you take any action is, what are the questions the SDRs are asking themselves? They're usually asking anywhere between 5 to 7 questions. These questions are, am I enjoying what I'm doing? Do I actually enjoy what I'm doing, right? This is also important because when you hire SDRs, if you can hire an SDR that actually has a mission-based approach and they're aligned with your mission, they're going to have a lot more fun, right?
Yeah.
If you sell a cancer diagnostic software and someone in their family had cancer, maybe they passed away, et cetera, like they are going to be far more mission-driven and they're going to be far more immune to the ups and downs. You know, so like these are the sorts of people that you want to hire, right? And then the second question they ask that's really important, which actually number one is the most important, like, do I enjoy what I'm doing? Like if they enjoy mm-hmm. what they're doing, typically other areas like they're more flexible in. But the number two is, am I hitting quota and I'm making good money? If one and two are good, you know, in general, the burnout rate's going to be low. But then there's a few other things they care about, right? After that, you know, after Maslow's hierarchy of needs are typically met, they're starting to look at, you know, do I like the people I'm surrounded with? Am I learning from them? Like, am I going to thrive in this environment? Right. These are kind of the next questions. And then, is there a promotional path for me? You know, and that's, again, another why I brought that up earlier. If you're only hiring SDRs to book meetings and you have no plan for any promotional path, you are going to, you know, it's going to lead to churn and yep. It's going to be a disaster. So they're going to be asking that question. And then, you know, do I value the skills that I'm learning and is sales for me? If the answer to any of these questions is no, right, then that's when they're going to start burning out. And though the grass is always greener, kind of, you know, and the reality is the reality is the same, that you'll be out of luck on your investment in training and that and resourcing that 9-month old SDR and forced to start with scratch with a new hire. That SDR will end up getting another SDR role and having to go through it again. It happens all the time.
Yep.
So I think first you need to ask that question. Understand if all those questions can be answered with a resounding yes. If not, you first want to start on those.
Perfect. And yeah, that's the good question on the burnout procedure. And yeah, I do believe that Speaks will not fix the burnout. It's just not going to happen. I've seen it fail so many times and it looks so sad and pathetic when the team or when the leadership specifically does it. Rents aside, let's move on to the very last question of today's episode, which is your final thoughts on both parts. So again, in the first one, we covered a lot of cold calling, and this one, we covered a lot of people who are doing cold calling or most of the time doing the cold calling. Any final thoughts, recommendations to the founders who are listening to this right now and most likely are figuring out, you know, their next steps and building out their sales processes or maybe been building out their sales teams?
Yeah, I would say that when I think about to take a step back, if you think about how sales development arised, you know, almost a decade ago with predictable revenue and, you know, the rise of sales acceleration platforms, email tracking, call automation, all of these things, right? If you were to look at the number of meetings an organization was booking, and IBM and some other organizations did this study too, as well as McKinsey, there actually hasn't been a significant increase in the number of meetings booked per headcount. So what I'm saying is that even with the explosion and plethora of tools and services available, you would expect that maybe SDRs would be booking 100 meetings a day, right? When like 99% of their day could be automated, but that's not the case. So I would say that starting now with some of the more advancements in AI, in RevOps, the way that things are actually connected, if I was to restart things over again, I could have a much leaner team. All right, because the tools that were available to us, you know, 5 years ago when we started Orm are now available to, you know, pretty much any startup. And whether that's, you know, leveraging some of the new custom GPTs, if it's leveraging some of the new sales tech, I would highly recommend that one of the first hires that comes alongside a potential BDR hire or founder-led sales is actually a RevOps hire or a BDR that is within RevOps. Everyone has the same tech stack. And I can tell you that when I look at a customer who has Outreach as their sequencer, they have Zoom Info as their database and Salesforce as their CRM, that is the same. Yeah, there's thousands, 100,000 companies that have the exact same tech stack. What's funny is that when I look at customers and prospective customers I speak to that are directly competitive, not tangentially, not product adjacencies, they have a directly competitive like product. They're competing. They mention by name that this other company is their direct competitor and they're seeing them. And those competitors are either my customer or not, or I've spoken to them. They have the same damn tech stack, right? But some SDRs and organizations are generating 10x the pipeline while the other one is struggling to book a meeting. So you have to understand that if they have access to the same tools and they have a competing product and they're going after, you know, the same market, you have to understand like what is the potential difference. And it really comes down to, you know, two things that I've seen. First is culture. And second is the depth of how their RevOps organization works, because outside of that, it's talent. That's part of culture. So if you hire best people, you have a culture around, you know, high performance, then it's really about enabling them and automating as much of the general bullshit work away. And most orgs, as they scale, nothing becomes more permanent than a temporary solution that works.
I'll say
that again. Like nothing is more permanent than a temporary solution that works. So because they're not RevOps focused in the beginning, you're going to come up with a bunch of temporary solutions. And if you imagine a garden, right, that's pristine, that's what you started with. By the end of your first or second year, that garden is overrun with weeds. And just like you would refactor your code on an application to make it faster, you need to make sure that you refactor the way that you run your RevOps. And starting with RevOps and, you know, a potential person to drive, you know, those systems like the SDR, if you can start laying the groundwork for very efficient, very lean 5x, 10x areas of your prospecting, whether it's enrichment, et cetera, and lay down the groundwork for greater automation versus headcount, you are going to be able to scale significantly faster, and you're going to be able to shorten that time to get to the answer that you want, right? Whether that answer is, you know, does this product working or do we need to change up our strategy, right? Like are we too early to scale, et cetera? If you're still trying to figure that out and you need more meetings, you need more customer conversations and more revenue, nothing would be more powerful than that. So I think that would be, you know, my take when I look back over the last like 10 years and especially look at the current market today and what's available that frankly was never available before. It's a really exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's for people who have not heard the part one, which is, first of all, go damn listen to it. It's about damn time. That was a similar takeaway from Terry. RevOps, super important to build them all early on because... yeah, shitty solutions that are serving as, you know, temporary holders or crutches, as the engineers say, they just stay around and eventually you have a bazillion crutches and then shit just falls apart and waste a ton of time for the sales staff. So that's a great finalization of the series. There might be third part, might be not. Most likely third part is going to come in the form of the article. So obviously, keep your eyes peered. I'm going to share the link to Fundraising Radio on Substack so you can follow our written content, which is filled with specific details on specific strategies. So take a look at that. And of course, I'm going to reach out to Terry asking for additional links that were mentioned during the interview. So Wayne SDR's interviews, the blog post that Terry written himself, recruiting firms, SDR schools, and of course, there's going to be a link to ORM. So if you are looking for the solution for cold calling, definitely take a look at ORM. And once again, going to mention it, we have not sold out. We are not being sponsored for this. I just legitimately like ORM. So on this note, people, we're going to wrap it up. Have a good day as usually.